Welcome to Creative Talk Podcast, where we talk all things success, longevity, motivation, and faith. I'm Dr. Carla Scott, and this is episode 7, sponsored by The Vocal Spa, vocal training for worship leaders, recording artists, and live performers. Today, we have a fantastic guest, a dear friend, and just a brilliant woman. You'll see. Stacey Evans Morgan, who is an American writer with 31 years of experience in the entertainment industry, 25 years as a television writer and producer, and she's also a published author with 3 books, including works of poetry, a children's book, and a novel. Welcome, Stacey. How are you doing?
Hey there, Carla. Dr. Carla, I'm so honored to be here today. I'm doing great.
Without further ado, let's get right into it.
Okay.
For listeners who do not know who you are, and you have tremendous credits and are a veteran in your industry, very well respected, talk a little bit about what you do specifically and how you came to do the creative work that you do in film and television.
Wow. Okay. Well, I am, first and foremost, I am a television writer and producer. I work in the scripted industry because there's so many facets of television now, so you have to distinguish what genre you work in. And primarily my work has been in situation comedy, which I love because I love to laugh, I love to make others laugh, and I love to also tell a story. So what better way than to work in situation comedy? Get my start. Like you said, I'm celebrating my 31st year in this industry. I'm sitting back on that for a second because that's blowing me away, you know? And I feel very blessed to be able to say that. I started off, my very first job was at Paramount Pictures. And I was working as an assistant to an assistant. Humble beginnings, but it was really all about just getting my foot on that lot. You know, James Brown once said, open up the door. I don't want nobody giving me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. And that's how I felt. I just wanted to be on a studio lot and just get my feet wet. And I didn't know that writing was something that I would be doing professionally, because in those days, primarily in the 70s and the 80s, even if you saw TV shows that featured Black people, African-American people, 9 times out of 10, it still wasn't written by us. So me as a young creative or young professional, I didn't even know that that was a career option, as crazy as that sounds. To me, that sounds really crazy. But that was not an option that we just readily thought about. But later on, I just knew I always had a calling to write. And I was probably about 24 years old when I wrote my first play. It wasn't just a play, it was a musical. Like my mom always says, you just got to do everything big, don't you? You just got to do everything on a grand scale. I did a 35-member, it was like a 40-member choir and a cast and dancers and the whole 9 yards. And the experience of hearing my words go from the page to the stage, that was the light bulb moment for me. So I knew somehow I got to back into this experience. And so that was the beginning for me. Fast forward, I've had a lot of different job experiences in the industry. You name it. I've done it. I worked as a production assistant. I worked as an assistant to different producers. I worked on the music side for Motown for a short stint. I kind of just dabble all over. But television was primarily where I really got my feet wet. And I will fast forward because I had a lot of different production type jobs, even working behind the scenes in programming, which was so boring, but it was so necessary. And it was something that I knew that later on in my career, I'll be back to this, to have the understanding. And sure enough, that is the case. But worked in programming for a station out here, KCAL Channel 9, which was at the time a Disney affiliate. Now it's associated with CBS. But it was great experience because I didn't know that the Lord was just setting me up to understand the architecture of how TV works, understanding programming. When you turn your television on from the time early in the morning to the time you turn it off, there's something called day parts. So there's early morning, there's afternoon, there's fringe, there's access to prime, there's prime time. So understanding the architecture of TV was really important, that you know you have to program something for every single part of the day. Otherwise, we just have dead air. It's the same with radio. So programming actually became very fascinating for me. I feel like I'm maybe getting off of your question, but I think this all leads up to, you know, where I am today. So we'll fast forward. I worked for KCAL Channel 9 for about 3 years. During that time, I took the opportunity to get my first producer credit, if you will. I was working in programming, and their idea, the station's idea during February of programming for Black History Month, was pulling out all the Black movies that they had in the library and programming those every weekend, House Party and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, really? So I just boldly, in a meeting one day, just said, I have an idea that for something that we could do during Black History Month that would be, I think, a great outreach to the community, and it would be more evergreen and it would be enlightening. And so I produced these 30-second spots called People with a Vision. And we used the talent that we had there for the news, Pat Harvey and Larry Carroll, two African-American news anchors. And they were basically these 30-second Black historical vignettes, if you will. And then the sales and marketing team got all over that and decided to take those 10 spots that I produced and package them and got sponsors, AT&T, Coca-Cola, McDonald's. So now these were 1-minute spots for the channel that belonged exclusively to that. You weren't going to see it anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And we highlighted people like Garrett A. Morgan, historical figures that we don't normally talk about in Black history, or that a lot of young people don't know, Garrett A. Morgan or Wilma Rudolph, or just different historians besides Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and things of that sort. So that was a light bulb moment for me. I was like, I can do this. I can do this. So, I think go back to the writing, when I got the opportunity to work with Yvette Lee Bowser, on a little show.
And tell us who Yvette Lee Bowser is.
Yvette Lee Bowser is, well, she was the creator of the show that I worked on with her, Living Single. And it was originally a pilot called My Girls, and I got a chance to work with her on the pilot. And when the show got picked up for Fox, I worked on the show the first season as her assistant, and it was a wonderful experience. And it probably solidified that feeling that I had when I did that play. It solidified that, yeah, this is what I want to do. Because now here was a show about four, you know, single women in the city trying to make their way, trying to navigate through love and careers and, you know, just trying to find their way. And I was like, I want to be a part of something like that where I could help tell our stories. So that was the beginning for me. Does that answer your question?
It really does. And as you're taking us through parts of your journey, and trust me, that's not all of it. This is a supremely accomplished woman that we're hearing from today. But just in the parts of the journey that you've already walked us through, tell me from your vantage point today, can you tell the difference between a person who's maybe at your same place in the industry, but hasn't had all of the experience that you've had, if you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. The reason I'm asking that is because it sounds like every place that you found yourself in the industry has added to your ability to do what you do now.
Absolutely. Even the jobs that I hated, I learned at a very early point in my career, I just said, you know what, God's going to use this. This is a teachable moment for me. So this period of time that I have to be working in this job that I'm not really crazy about, working for people who were not very nice or patient or anything like that, it was still a teachable moment, if nothing else, to show me that's not how I'm going to operate. That's not how I'm going to conduct myself as a professional. And so, yeah, I mean, back in the days, I'm saying back in the old days, before there was the internet, there was something called public access. And I feel like equivalent to what a lot of the young content creators are doing now on YouTube and creating their own projects and web series, I was doing the same thing on cable with the public access because it was open to anyone that you could go in, get certified to use their equipment. And I'm like, what? For free? We can take out cameras and lights? I was like, I'm in. And I created projects. I created a faith-based type Saturday Night Live sketch show called Parable Theater. We had these really funny sketches. I did something else called LA in the Spotlight. And I think back on those days because I was just fearless. I was like, I didn't think about can we or can we not do it. It was a matter of, okay, so what day can we do this? When can I get the equipment? And that first show, LA in the Spotlight, that I did for cable, that show I had as my guest Robert Townsend, who had just come off his Hollywood Shuffle fame. I had Paula Abdul, who had just dropped her first album. And then I had two other featured guests who were artisans here in the LA area. And I was just fearless. I didn't have any fear as far as calling publicists and asking, saying, hi, I'm the producer of LA in the Spotlight. We want to interview Paula Abdul. And her team was like, yeah, you know, I knew how to sell it. I think I knew how to sell it. I had worked in casting, so I knew how to talk to these representatives, but I felt like I knew how to sell it. And I was like, they were like, yeah, and she's a new artist, so they wanted to get her out there as much as possible. They didn't know what my reach was. I didn't have a reach with LA in the Spotlight. I couldn't tell them how many viewers. All they knew was it was a new show coming on cable TV in LA, and that I had already booked Robert Townsend. So I used Robert Townsend's name to book. So they were like, oh, Robert Townsend's going to be on the show. Oh, yeah, yeah, we want Paula to be on the show. So that was pretty fun. So I mentioned those days because I think as you get older, you start maybe putting even restrictions on yourself, if that makes any sense. Like trying to figure out all the logistics. Back then, I didn't worry about budgets. I had friends and other aspirational co-content creators who were down. They were just down for the vision. Like, Stace, when are we going to shoot? What are we doing? It wasn't about, can you pay me? I can only work these days or whatever. So it was a glorious time. And so now when I see young content creators who are fearless, like I look at my niece, she's 20, she'll be 21 years old. This camera, this is her, she's created so much with this, and beautifully, shot beautifully. And so when I see young people now, young professionals who have the vision, I say, you really have no excuse. You have no reason to not get your vision out there. You have YouTube, the internet, the World Wide Web. I say it so often, the World Wide Web is still the new frontier. We're still at the very beginning of where it's going to end up. Because right now, you can just go and stake your claim and put your flag down and say, this is my territory. It's not going to be like that forever. It's not. There's going to be more restrictions and things of that sort. But right now, it's an exciting time.
I love everything that you're saying, because I it's almost like you're saying what's old is new again.
Yeah.
We had these days with cable access. I experienced it. Now it's on the internet, which gives you a worldwide audience. Right. So what would you say to that young creator who's, you know, out here, they have their things going on YouTube and the Gram and all of these other wonderful platforms, and nothing is really biting, like nothing is really jumping off. What would you say to them?
I would say just keep at it. I mean, the ideas that you have, God gave it to you for a reason. So if it's just 10 people that need to hear that, then, you know, don't get caught up with the numbers. This following thing, the social media thing, is so huge right now, but it can be damaging in a lot of ways, because if people feel like, oh, well, I only have 500 followers, or I only have 1,000 or 5,000 compared to these people who are out here with millions of followers, don't be discouraged. Just keep putting out your content. To me, it's like, if you have to post something every day, if it's an inspirational word, if you just say, or Mondays, if Mega Monday is going to be your day to do whatever that thing is that you do, make Mega Monday, make it an anticipated event. So whether you're playing music, whether you are telling a story, you're doing poetry, you're doing skits. I don't know what it's like out there, but out here, these kids are going for broke. I mean, they are shooting stuff every single day. And I'll give you an example. The guy, Andrew Batchelor, who goes by King Batch, when Vine was a big thing, I love his story because that was his story. He was like, he got, I guess, fired from a job, and he just said, okay, well, I'm off from work. I'm going to shoot something every day. I'm going to shoot a seven, you know, with Vine, you only had 7 seconds. I'm going to shoot 7 seconds every single day of something. Mm. And because he started posting it, people started anticipating, what's he going to do tomorrow? So now you've created this content, and people are now waiting. The audience is waiting. And just like that slogan for THX, when you go to the movie theaters, the audience is listening. The audience is waiting. They're always waiting for what you have. So for that young person, if you have an idea that you want to just shoot it, look at Issa Rae. Perfect example. Perfect example. She started vlogging when she was still a student at Stanford, and then came up with the idea of Awkward Black Girl and just started telling her stories and just started putting it up. And it wasn't about how many followers I had. She just started putting it up. And lo and behold, people, it was relevant and it was relatable. People started following her on the YouTube channel. So, yeah. So that's what I would say. Take advantage of all of that. Take advantage of YouTube, Vimeo, Patreon, all of that. Take advantage of it.
So that really leads into one of the three nuggets of wisdom that you left for me as sort of our pre-conversation details. And you said that one of your number one lessons learned is that patience and persistence are both essentials. Like, the obstacles are going to come, closed doors are going to come, steady stream of no's, but it only takes one yes to change the game. So keep going. So, you know,
that's it. Persistence. I mean, you know, it's so cliche, but persistence does pay off. And if you have a vision, if that seed has been planted in your soul and you go to sleep and you wake up with that same thing, then you're supposed to be on that track. So now it's just the patience game, because everybody can't get to the finish line immediately, nor do you want to. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to, you don't want to rush to get to that, to the end. You want to learn along the way. So the persistence, it has to be there. The patience along with it. So being patient but being persistent, just continuing, knowing that you're going to get 10 no's. You're going to keep knocking on the door. You'll get 10 no's before you get that, like I said, that game changing yes, that will confirm for you. I mean, if I can tell you just a quick story that maybe might encourage. So I was on this on this journey of just becoming this professional television writer. And, you know, I'd had, you know, a couple of good experiences that happened for me. You know, I ended up getting accepted into the Warner Brothers Writers Program. I mean, that was a very prestigious program that takes in maybe 35 people out of thousands of applicants. And I was one of 35 in 1997. Then I land an agent. I got to write a freelance episode of Jamie Foxx. So things were going, right? And the momentum was happening, but it just still was just going so slow for me. I wanted to be on staff. I was tired of being broke, just all of this kind of stuff. And, but I had worked at BET for a short stint while I was living in Washington, D.C., Silver Spring area. And those humble beginnings, those relationships that you cultivate along the way will come back and they will either haunt you or bless you. And in my case, it blessed me. And I remember I was in struggle mode. And I always call this my ATM testimony. In total struggle mode, I was at the point in my life where I was starting to self-doubt whether or not this was what I was called to do. When you get to the age 30 and you're still trying to make that thing. Now we look at 30 now, it's like, girl, child, that's young, but it's something about you think at 28, you're supposed to have it all figured out. And by 30, you should be rolling. And that's just not the case. I mean, you've only been out of college less than 10 years. That's not the case, right? But for some reason, we think that by 30, you're supposed to have it all together. And if you're at 31 and still struggling, then you start to doubt, is this me or is this you, God, or is this me? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? And I knew I wanted to write. And I was at the point where I was temping, you know, after having some really great professional experiences, I moved back to LA from DC to pursue this writing thing and had to humble myself to go back to temping, doing temp work, because you have to eat and you have to pay your bills. And I remember I got to this point. I remember the year, I think it was 90, maybe 97, 98. Yeah, 20 years ago. Look at that. Woof. 20 years ago. And I remember sitting in my apartment and I remember the lights were going to be shut, that my power was going to be shut off. I had already got my notices and everything. And I just remember sitting on the edge of my bed and I said, God, if this is really for me, please give me a sign, because I will go out and just get a job. I will do that. I was at that point. You know, a lot of my friends I went to college with, they were rolling, they were homeowners. They were, you know, had very prestigious jobs, making six figures, driving company cars, having expense accounts and all that kind of stuff. And here I was in struggle mode doing this. And you kind of start feeling like people are looking at you like, you still chasing that dream? And I had got a call from one of my old colleagues at BET who was moving to LA, and BET was doing this whole new thing where they had bought the rights to 10 romance novels from Kensington Publishing. And they were going to turn these 10 books into movies. And one of my old fellow producers, she gave me a call because she knew that I was a writer, and sent me the book and said, I want you to take a look at this and see if it's something that you think you could adapt into a screenplay. I was like, of course. But it's something about when you're in struggle mode, that creativity gets zapped. You know how that is, you know, you can't think, you can't write. And I just remember I asked God, I said, Father, I know I got bills due, phone's gonna be shut off, my power's gonna be shut off. But if you could just give me some creative grace, just to give me, to get through this, to read this book, and to try to find some clarity how I could adapt this, I would really appreciate it. So I got a call to take this meeting. Driving to that meeting, I think I probably had less than a half a tank of gas. I may have had $1, maybe $2 in my wallet. This was around Christmas time too, had zero money. And this is where the ATM testimony comes in, because I talk about how much money do you have to have? The minimum you have to at least be able to use your ATM card to get some money is what? $20. Mm-hmm. I had less than $20. I had probably about $17.95. So I couldn't even get money out of the ATM. But I went to that meeting, put all the worries behind me, and I went into the meeting, presented my vision of how I saw the book being adapted into a screenplay. And to make a long story short, at the end of the meeting, they were very pleased, and they decided to make me the offer right there to become one of the writers for one of the 10 books. The next thing I know, now this doesn't normally happen, but again, I was glad it happened this way. The next thing I know, the executive producer's assistant, she walks in with a folder with paperwork and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, these are things I know I need to have an attorney look at, but it was a deal memo. And then there was a check. I mean, no, there was an envelope. And I had no idea what was in the envelope, but I just felt check energy. I was like, I think there's some money in here. Praise the Lord. I'm going to keep my professional stature, but yes, I have $17.95 in the bank. So if this is $100, I'm going to be very happy. So I did shook the hands, took the paperwork. I said, of course, I'm going to let my attorneys take a look at it. Walked off the studio lot, had that envelope in my hand. It was killing me. I had to open it up. And when I tell you, when I opened it up, it was over $5,000. It was less than $10,000, but it was over $5,000 in that envelope. It took everything I had to get myself to my car, to not get hit by the truck coming down the street, because I was stopped in the middle of the street like, oh, God, thank you, Jesus. I got in my car. I was like, oh, thank you, God. Thank you, thank you. And I swear, I drove. My eyes were flooded with tears. I went from $17.95 to having over $5,000 in my hand. Mm-hmm. If that was not a clear confirmation that, so I took a long story to tell you that was my story of perseverance. Because sometimes you drop out of the race too soon because of fear. Because, oh, well, that didn't, I got five no's. Well, that's it. I can't take it anymore. But if you know that you are called to do that thing, whatever that thing is, you better set yourself up and expect 20 no's. So when you get those 20 no's, okay, I knew this was coming. Next, and move on to the next one. Mm. And just know. Mm. So.
I love that. Expect 20 no's because your yes is coming. So yeah. That goes hand in hand with what you talked about with just being a person of faith, having faith in God. Mm-hmm. And this is a podcast where we talk very freely about that. We're very explicit about the fact that faith is our foundation here. And but also having faith in the fact that, you know, as you said earlier, your gifts were given to you for a reason. So yeah. You can trust that. It's not an accident. It's not a trick.
No, it's not a gimmick, not a trick. I knew, I mean, from a very early age, the one I was gifted in storytelling. I could tell really good stories, and I'm a good writer. And I still had a lot to learn. So that experience was a great experience, but I knew my ultimate desire, though, I wanted to be on staff. I wanted to be on a writing staff. And, but there were things that I still had to learn. And so, you know, after that movie experience, I mean, that money from that movie, and that was my first teleplay, my first movie credit, really. It was called After All. And after that, I was still on this track that I wanted to get on staff somewhere. I wanted to be on a TV staff. And I had a mentor Sarah Finney Johnson, bless her name. Every time I say it, because she's just an angel, who looked out for me, who was one of the executive producers and creators of Moesha. And when I moved back to LA, she took it upon herself that she wanted to mentor me. And the next thing I know, Moesha has a spinoff that they're doing. And again, just timing. It was just the timing. And she called me and asked me to come to the taping. I went to the taping. And when I went on that set, I was like, I'm writing on the show. I just knew it. I said, I'm going to write on the show. I had never seen Monique. Monique was funny and new and fresh. I was like, I'm going to write on this show. And when the pilot did, you know, after the pilot did successfully and it got picked up that they were going to do a series, lo and behold, I get a phone call from Sarah. Normally they call your agent. Your agent calls you. But she called me directly and said, can you meet with us? We're meeting with writers on Monday. This was on Sunday. No, we're meeting with writers on Tuesday. Can you come over to the studios to meet? I'm like, this, yeah. It's like, yes, this is the call that I've been waiting for. And Carla, when I tell you, it was something about, it wasn't a cockiness, but I knew it was my time. And when I went to that studio, Sunset Gower Studios, where they shoot Scandal right now, and they were shooting Moesha, and we were meeting over at the I think it was either Sunset or I was at Paramount, wherever they were doing the meetings. And I walked in that lobby, and there were a ton of writers that I knew. And I felt happy to see them all, but I was like, good luck to y'all, but I know I'm going. I mean, I didn't say this to them, but I was like, I'm going to have a seat at that table. Hope to see you there. So, and I just knew it, but still the waiting game. This is where the patience comes in. You take these meetings. Now you feel like you've arrived. You're taking the power meetings and you're doing all the things that you need to do, and then still nothing. No, the phone doesn't ring, nothing. And I remember it was probably 3 weeks later, and it was killing me. I was like, God, I haven't heard anything yet. And oh my God, what if I didn't get the job? And I really want to be on that show. And I remember God told me to go, just get out of the house, go put on your sneakers, go take a walk. And I walked around my neighborhood, beautiful big trees everywhere, and I just walked. And it was like he met me in the breeze. Like, I got you. He was walking with me. And I had to walk off that anxiety. And when I got home that same day, that very same day, that afternoon, my phone rang, and it was my agent. And he said, well, so yeah, we heard from the people over at the Moesha spinoff, and I'm sitting here in business affairs because they were going over your contract that they just offered you. I don't know what he said after that, because I dropped the phone. I was like, thank you, Lord. I said, I know my neighbors probably thought, oh my gosh, she's crazy. But yeah, so that's when I got the offer, and it was May of 1999, I remember. And that was when I got the offer to come on board as a staff writer for the Moesha spinoff. We didn't have a name for the show, but it later became The Parkers. And just an amazing experience. And I got a chance to start as a staff writer and graduate all the way to supervising producer. And what I didn't tell you was during that time, I had temped at Paramount Studios, had to humble myself to go back to the studios where there were people who I knew who were writers or whatever, and I had to just tuck all that pride away and be thankful for being on that lot. And I was temping, and they tried several times to offer me jobs. And are you sure you don't want to? We have a wonderful position here. And I was like, thanks, but no, I'm on a mission. I'm going to be a writer. And you could just see it in some people's eyes, just kind of like, okay, alrighty. And when I got the job on The Parkers, it was a UPN show, so it was part of Paramount. And so my email address was the same. It was the same extension. It was the Stacy that at the time, Stacy Evans, or it was SES Evans at Paramount, whatever. But some of my colleagues who found out that I was working on this show now, they were now, some of them were emailing me saying, wow, you really did it. I'm like, yeah, I told you that's what I wanted to. Wow, you know, and I remember one was even like, can I get a sample over to you? Sample script over to you. I mean, yeah. I mean, the persistence can make you sick sometimes, but that's where the patience has to come in, because they go together.
The faith and the patience and what you've described so far to me almost feels like a dance. There are times when you have to, you know, square dance, where you have a lot of partners, where you're trying to think creatively out of the box and create your own projects, have a lot of irons in the fire. And then there are times when you're dancing with that one partner because you're courting the situation because you know it's for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's called balance. Because you can burn yourself out just going for that one thing. So thinking out of the box or getting out your comfort zone may mean that you need, hey, maybe I need to go take a workshop. Let me go take a class. I've been working on, I've been on this treadmill trying to write, but maybe there's something else that you need to learn. So I did. I started taking workshops. I took Robert McKee's story structure workshop, which is world renowned. I took classes at UCLA in screenwriting. Anything that I could do to sharpen my tools, but also networking, getting out there and just networking. It's so important because you can just be in your little corner in your room and that's all, and it just consumes you, and that's not healthy. So sometimes you do need a creative release and you need some hobbies and you need something, whether it's to go take a dance class or to learn how to play golf or whatever, or play tennis or go skiing or something. You do need some kind of release. And being a writer, you have to observe life and you have to observe people. So, but I truly believe in getting out of the comfort zone because that's where your authenticity is waiting for you.
Okay, well, you've been an extremely good sport and we learned some details about you.
Oh, really? I just
do so. That's really cool.
I hope so. I hope to be encouraging to someone else, you know, and I believe in paying it forward, Carla. I believe in that we are to inspire, that we are to the things that have been given us, pay it forward. And it's just cyclical. It's scriptural, you know, you give and it shall, you know, it'll come right back to you. Press down, shaking together and running over. And I'll just share this with you. This one tidbit might be a little bit off topic, but yesterday we were having auditioning actors for the show that I'm on right now, Family Time. And there was an actor who I was fighting for them to get in, for the casting director. I kept saying, get this guy in. Trust me, get this guy in. He's new, he's young, you don't know him, but get him in because I've seen him. And sure enough, he came in and his presence just took over the room. And he was very humble, but it was the presence of God that was on him. But the presence just filled the room. And he was such a good sport and he did a great job. The audition was great. And then he, because I knew of him, I knew some of his other talents. I said, oh yeah, and he sings too. So he was put on the spot to sing and he did all kinds of stuff and he was so good. And so I never do this. Never. I never call an actor. If it's somebody that I know, I don't do it. I just keep that professional line. But I felt God wanted me to encourage him and I called him. This was hours later. And I said, I just need you to know that you have no idea how much you blessed us with your presence. Oh my God, are you kidding me? I said, no, your talent speaks for itself and your gifts are going to make room for you. Trust and believe you're going to be huge. I said, but your presence was so refreshing. And your willingness to just share your talent and your gift, I just had to tell him. He was almost in tears. He's like, oh my God, I can't believe you're sharing this with me. And I said, I just needed to encourage you that you're on the right track. And then that's when he went on to share with me that it was really encouraging, because he said, you know, out here in the business and you're trying to maintain your walk as a Christian, how challenging it can be. And he was given an example of a recent acting class that he took, that the teacher asked asked the students to do something that basically was against what he wanted to do, against his character. And he said that, he just said, nope, I can't do it. I can't do that. And the teacher asked him to come outside and said, you know, what's your problem? You're not better than anybody. And you're coming off as judgmental doing that. He says, I don't mean to be judgmental at all. As a matter of fact, I'll just sit out on that exercise. And basically they went back and forth, and he was just like, well, this is probably not the acting class for me. And he said he ended up he's on social media. He does his regular content stuff that he does. He's getting quite a following. And he said someone hit him up on Instagram and said, I was auditing that class that you were in, and it blessed me to see you take your stand, because I follow you and I see all your sketches and I see your walk. And this person said it was so refreshing to see someone really living the life that they're putting out there. And so she said, thank you. Thank you for taking that stand. And so I told him, I said, see, that's confirmations. Those are the confirmations. God's going to send you the confirmations. There have been so many doors that have been, about to get teary-eyed, that have been closed for me. And later I discover that was like God protecting me, holding me back. And he will do that. He will do that. And he will open the doors. The doors that are for us will be blown wide open and can't nobody shut them. But some of those things that we think are for us, we have to trust him. That's where the patience, that's where I said you have to have faith in God and faith in yourself and faith in your ability. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about that man, I mean, I felt like, you know, I said, I really had to call you and tell you that. I said, I don't call actors and tell them, I don't give feedback. And I said, and honestly, I don't even know if you're going to get the role. I said, because the network that I'm working for, they want a stunt cast. They want to bring in celebrities. And I said, and it's unfortunate. And a lot of times they want to bring in people who have a big social media following, so they know how many eyeballs they're bringing with them over someone who's a really good actor. And I said, but you just stay the course and you stay peculiar and you just continue to take your stand. I said, because you brought everything in that room. And as a result of that, the casting director immediately said, oh, I have a movie coming up that I'm casting for. I said, so it wasn't even about coming in for our show. I just wanted you to be sweet. And his talents made room for him. And so I want to just encourage anybody. I want to encourage people out there, especially if you're trying to pursue something in the arts. You know, it's very challenging, but God has us as beacons of light in this industry as well. He has us strategically placed, and he's doing that for a reason, because we need to shine out the darkness and we need to take a stand. And if you look at television right now and you look at film and you listen to music, you know, it's scary, the messages that are out there. But there are some good messages as well, and we are going to shine those lights. So if you have to be dirt poor and broke for a minute, it's okay. It's okay, because God will provide, and he's going to open up the door that's just for you.
So. I mean, incredible. And so as we wrap up, just what would you say if you could go back in time and stand face to face to 18-year-old Stacy? Mm-hmm. What would you say to your 18-year-old self?
I would say you're on the right track. I would say slow your roll a little bit. You know, don't get so anxious. Mm-hmm. Learn, I would say, but you're on the right track. That thing, you're not crazy for dreaming that dream that you're dreaming. You're not crazy. So just stay the course, slow down a little bit, listen more, talk less, study your craft, polish it, and just be ready. And just be ready. That's what I would say.
Words to live and thrive by. This has been Stacey Evans Morgan on this episode. And I don't know about you, but what wisdom and knowledge has been dropped and so much encouragement. Stacey, I want to thank you a million thanks.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Just sharing, you know, an hour of your life. Thank you so much.
This is powerful. And Carla, what you're doing with this, this is out of the box. This is, you're doing the right thing. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you to your listeners. And I pray that there was a little bit of inspiration going on today.